Hello and welcome. Before we start this podcast, a special announcement. I am Clive Oliver, commentator on international unicycle hockey, and today I will be doing the interview. Hello Clive, this is Ben. Thank you very much. What kind of accent is that?
This is a New Zealand, Australian sort of an accent, isn't it? That's where I'm from.
What, why do you sound a bit like me, Clive?
Nah, I'm totally different.
Clive, what's happening to your accent? Your accent's slipping.
No, I'm famous international unicycle hockey commentator.
Hello, folks, this is Ben.
Nah, it's me.
I don't think it is.
Listen, right, okay, we're going to start right now. I'm Clive Oliver, and we're going to interview Ben Matthews about unicycling. Okay, Ben, start the podcast in the traditional way with an obscure, funny anecdote. Off you go.
Okay, so in about 19...
Everybody knows who I am.
In about 1997...
I'm Clive Oliver, the unicycle hockey commentator. Good luck. Okay, tell your story.
Okay, so in about 1997...
No, I'm a real person, by the way. I just remembered. If you Google on YouTube the best unicycle hockey match ever made by me, you'll see. There, you'll hear me. Clive Oliver. I'm there with JC. I'm there. I'm commentating on the big match. Singapore versus Hong Kong.
All right, well, okay. Anyway, look, can I tell my story?
Yeah, go on. Start it now.
Okay, so it's 1997, I want to say, and I've got a big client, one of those really rich people who wants a birthday party for their kid, and they want something special. So, normally I take a very small unicycle. They say, can you bring maybe your big unicycle? Bring your giraffe unicycle. So, okay, I'll bring the giraffe unicycle to the party. The show goes well. But at that time of my career, 1997, whenever I took a giraffe unicycle, I wasn't sure whether it would fit inside a taxi. So before I got the taxi, I'd always take the saddle off the giraffe and... it's quite hard to take a saddle off a giraffe. You have to wedge the unicycle wheel between your feet, and then the saddle's up at about chin level, and you're trying to pull it out, wiggle it, pull it, trying to get the saddle to come out. Well, first of all, you undo the bolts. That would be the first thing. Loosen the bolts on the stem, on the seat post, and you're pulling the saddle out at the end of the show so you can fit it in a taxi. No problem. You're pulling it up. And as I'm pulling the saddle, I pull it out. I yank the saddle. I yank the saddle out. And the unicycle topples like a tree. Okay? Now, it's a DM giraffe, which is a fantastic unicycle from about 30 years ago. But it's very heavy. It's really solid, thick steel. And this 6-foot pole of solid steel swings down like a falling tree, and right below the unicycle in front of me is the 3-year-old birthday girl, and I swear the unicycle, this 6-foot pole of solid steel, this girder tumbling down from the heavens, misses her head by about a millimeter, crashes onto the floor, and no one notices really. And I just pick it up and go, okay, great, I'm off. But I think about it, my goodness. There's a tip, right? If that had fallen down on the girl's head, that could have been the end of my career. Hello and welcome. Before we get to today's episode, I want to remind you that if you're listening on a platform other than the BigBenShow.com, you can only hear the last 6 months or so of episodes. For the entire series, dating back to 2014, go to thebigbenshow.com/podcasts. And now a quick word from our sponsors. I love unicycling, and the best place to get all things unicycle related is at unicycle.com China. If you are in Hong Kong or Taiwan, it is so convenient to use unicycle.com China's online Taobao store. That's shop 48528150.taobao.com. I ordered a new unicycle seat and a seat post from unicycle.com China's Taobao store, and the shipping was practically free. Wow! They can even send you specific items that you can't find on their website. Just ask for Alex at unicycle.com China. So go there right now and get yourself a unicycle. The links are in the description. Right, let's get down to this week's interview. Hello, I'm Clive Oliver, and this week I'm standing in to interview the man himself, Mr. Ben Matthews. Hello, Ben. What were you doing in Oxford in 1990? Well, I was supposed to be at university, but I was at university, and I was supposed to be studying history. But I was spending a lot of my time at the juggling club, and I wasn't very good at juggling, but they had a unicycle, and I went to the unicycle club, there was a unicycle, and I got on it, and within two or three minutes, I was riding it, and I was like, whoa, finally, something in circus related that I'm good at. And I've got a theory on how to ride a unicycle that I don't think's been shared before, so I'm going to tell you now. This is the Ben Matthews method for learning to ride a unicycle instantly. By the way, I would like to point out that although I was convinced for about 6 months I was a natural at unicycling because I learnt it by myself in 2 minutes. What did I say? 3 minutes. But pretty much instantly, I'm not a natural. I pretty soon realised. Well, I didn't soon realise because at that time, I'm really rambling. There wasn't really any internet. There weren't other unicycle clubs. I didn't know any other unicyclists. And when I eventually did meet other unicyclists at conventions some years later, I realised that there were people who were way more gymnastic and talented than me and could do fantastic tricks on the unicycle that I cannot do. But anyway, I did learn extremely fast. I only ever met one of two other people maybe who learned as fast as I did. One was a professional squash player who I taught, and he learned in about 2 minutes. Anyway, so that's beside the point. Here we go, the Ben Matthews method for learning to ride a unicycle. What you do is you get a bicycle, preferably a BMX bicycle, and you ride it backwards, okay? This is what I was doing in the summer before I'd even gone to university and seen the juggling club and the unicycle. And basically what you do is just you're riding the bicycle backwards, your butt is on the handlebars, and your hands are either side of your bottom holding the handlebar grips, okay? And you are facing backwards, you're facing the back wheel. And then you push off, you quickly get your feet onto the pedals, and you start pedalling, okay? And so what you're doing is you're riding the bicycle, the BMX bicycle, backwards, sitting on the handlebars, pedalling. Actually, you're pedalling in reverse, because of the way you're sitting. And the bicycle is going forwards. And it's a little bit scary. You need a little bit of space, because you don't really know which direction you're going in. You need quite an open area, a flat open area. But it's not really that hard if you're like me and you liked a bit of skateboarding, you like to be a BMX. Not particularly talented at any of those. But I liked BMXing and skateboarding. I could do an ollie, whatever. So I'm on the BMX. I'm riding it backwards, sitting on the handlebars, pedalling. And then about a month later, I'm at university and I see a unicycle for pretty much the first time, and I get on it and it feels almost the same as riding a BMX bicycle backwards. Because on the BMX bicycle, your butt is right, all your weight is over one wheel, the front wheel, and you're pedaling, and you have that, hopefully you can ride a bicycle already, and you know that riding a bicycle, you mustn't stop. You know, there's no half measures really here. You've got to commit 100%, otherwise you will fall off. But if you commit 100% and you get some movement, centrifugal force and the physics of the spinning wheel is going to hold you up. I mean, everybody knows a bicycle, if you're stationary, it's very hard to balance. But once you're moving, if you just go with the move, and if it starts leaning to the left, you just keep on riding and turn to the left. If it leans to the right, you just keep on riding. You don't panic. You don't reach for a wall or someone or jump off the bike. You just keep on riding. Especially if you're sitting backwards, it's going to be very hard to jump off. So I was doing that on the BMX about a month before, and if you have that in your mind, and then you get on a unicycle, it actually feels easier. It does. Because I think one of the big problems with people learning to unicycle is they will be like holding onto a wall with one hand, which is okay, but it means you're not balancing, you're constantly unbalancing as you lean over to one side to grab hold of the wall. You're not committing. So if you just push off on the unicycle into open space, as I did on the BMX bike, and this time I'm looking forwards, so it's easier, but again, my weight is over one wheel, and I'm pedaling, and I know from the BMX experience that you've just got to keep pedaling, and if the bike or the unicycle starts leaning to the left, don't jump off, don't be near a wall, just keep on pedaling into the curve and turn left, and you'll come up again, you'll come upright. And then if the bike leans to the right, you don't panic, you just keep on pedaling. And you try it, but you're trying to keep your weight, straight over the wheel. That was the case on the BMX bike, and it was also the case on the unicycle. You keep your weight right over the wheel. You are literally balancing as well as you possibly can, minimizing the chances of leaning too far to the right or too far to the left. But just going with it, and really committing 100%. And this is my method for learning to ride a unicycle instantly. First you get a BMX, you ride the BMX backwards, sitting on the handlebars, facing the rear. And then you go on a unicycle and bang, you can ride a unicycle instantly. Let me know if that works for anybody else. Oh, and just a quick extra, I also want to point out the pedals in the live position, what Russell Wells calls the live position. When you get on the unicycle, maybe you're holding onto something, just to get onto the unicycle, and then you move your feet so the pedals and the cranks are horizontal to the ground. Yeah, so there's not one foot up, one foot down. Both feet are at the same height, and Russell Wells calls this the live position, because this is when the feet are level, this is when you can start pedaling. If you try to pedal with one foot from the position where one foot's right down and one foot's right up, you're not really balanced, and it's much better to start from the pedal's live positions. That's my only other extra tip, thanks to Russell Wells. All right, Ben, thanks. Ben, what was what was the first unicycle then? Okay, so the club, the juggling club, had I think it was called a sem trainer unicycle. It wasn't the most expensive sem cycle, but it was a decent unicycle. And then as soon as I could ride it, I was hooked, because at that point I thought I was the greatest unicyclist in the world, because I hadn't met really anybody else. There was one other person who could unicycle at the juggling club. But they didn't learn as fast as me. Ooh. So anyway, I was super excited. I had to get my own. And someone was selling a cheap 24-inch Taiwanese unicycle. So that was the first unicycle I actually owned. It had a really uncomfortable saddle. I remember that. And pretty soon I bought myself my own 20-inch unicycle. I can't remember what it was. It might have been a sem... It might have been a sem cycle. I definitely got a sem cycle at one point. Sem cycle from Sem Abrahams, the Dutch unicycle legend, built a lovely unicycle. Tell me about Russell Wells and unicycle hockey. Okay, so I'm still in the juggling club, and in the very early 1990s, there were loads of there were big juggling conventions annually, and some local ones annually, and I would go to this annual British juggling convention, and in one room there was a guy called Russell Wells, and he had the equipment for unicycle hockey. So I had a go, and I scored a goal. on my first go. Again, I thought I was God's gift to unicycle hockey, but actually, basically, it was only because I'd been unicycling for about 2 or 3 weeks more than the other players. We were all basically absolute novices, but I was just maybe 2 weeks ahead, and I was goal hanging basically. I was hanging by the goal. The ball came to me. I just tapped it in. So, but again, I'm hooked on that. So then I want to form a unicycle hockey team at the university, and I did. I think it was 1992. It was hard, you know, because no one's got a unicycle. no one can ride a unicycle, so it took a while to get at least, and then to play a match locally, you need at least six players, so you can play three aside. You've got to find a venue, and I found that the venues I found, our tyres left horrible black marks on the floor, and I had to tell the management, oh, I don't know, oh, the unicyclist just creeped in. I didn't want them to be here, but of course I actually, I was the one who put them in there to play, to ride unicycles indoors. So, but I think by 1992, we had about 8 or 9 unicyclists in Oxford, and we were going to the juggling conventions and playing unicycle hockey at the side. You know, there'd be one room where there'd be a little casual unicycle hockey match. I started to meet other unicycle hockey people.
Tell me about meeting Lee, Jellyhead Rickler, and the London Loonies.
Okay, yeah, this was the next really big thing. I was pursuing two kinds of unicycling at that time, I guess. At the convention, I'd seen Sem Abrahams and maybe Yuri Abrahams' brother doing a few unicycle tricks, like bunny hopping over somebody, or and I had a video from the IJA, the International Juggling Association convention, a VHS videotape, and there was one kid there who did a juggling show, and at the end, just for a few split seconds, he did some wheel walking, and so it was very tricky. There's no internet, so I was amazed at this, and I would pause the VHS video, try to put frame by frame to see exactly what he was doing, and seeing where he took his foot off, where he put it on the wheel, how many paces he took, at what point what position the pedals were in when he put his foot back on. And I taught myself to wheel walk. I saw someone doing, must have been Yuri or Sem, doing a uni spin. I think it's called a uni spin. It's where you do a bunny hop on the unicycle, and while you're in midair, you flip the unicycle 180 degrees, so the front of the saddle becomes the back, and then you land back on it, of course. So you jump in the air, flip the unicycle 180, spin the unicycle 180 degrees, land back on it. And that's where I realised my limitation. I could not do that. Eventually I learnt about 25 years later how to do it, and I've got to see it, by the way. Oh, I am by no means, of course, an expert at doing tricks on a unicycle. If you want to learn how to do a uni spin, just go to YouTube. There's people much better than me. This is just my own personal experience. This is my tip. If you want to learn the uni spin, get a really long seat post, or if you haven't got one, just put your seat as high as you can. So I got my seat up to about, I don't know, chest height, just below my nipples, really high. Jump onto the unicycle and start bunny hopping. The seat, of course, you can't sit on the unicycle. You're holding the seat against your chest and bunny hopping, and then jump, do your bunny hop, flip the seat 180, land back on the pedals. It's much easier with a giant, really long seat post. Of course, you can't get back on the unicycle, but once you've mastered just jumping from the pedals, spinning the unicycle, landing back on the pedals, then you can start to lower the seat, and so eventually you can do the uni spin and then get back on sitting on the seat again. What was your question, by the way?
My question was about unicycle hockey. When did you meet Lee Jellyhead Rick?
All right, yeah, so, yeah, sorry. So, besides trying to do tricks on the unicycle and failing at the unispin, I was very interested, I was mad about unicycle hockey. All my walls of my room were covered with pictures I was drawing of unicyclists. And at one of the juggling conventions, I think I must have met Lee Jellyhead Rickler, who was one of the people behind the London Loonies, the London Unicycle Hockey Team. And he was obviously also really, really into it. And we played some matches at the unicycle convention. And he organised the first British unicycle convention. Wow, yeah, he organised the first British unicycle convention, and there was a tournament, a national tournament. So the various teams that had started appearing, basically around juggling clubs, where they'd have an offshoot of a unicycle hockey team, they came together, and we had a British unicycle convention and first British unicycle hockey national tournament. The teams competed. It was a knockout tournament. My team was pretty professional. We had our own t-shirts. Yeah, I made some lovely black t-shirts with a Oxford City Psycho. Oh, that's my name on my team, by the way. Oxford City Psycho, spelled C-Y-C with a giant O, which turned into a unicycle on the picture, on the logo. The Oxford City Psychos, we look quite professional in our black team colours. And we, unfortunately, we crashed out in the round robin stages because the other team had Yuri Abrahams playing for them. And he was obviously way better than the rest of us who had already been riding unicycles for 6 months. And we lost and didn't get through to the knockout stages. But I was gutted. But after that, I still wanted to play more unicycle hockey, and I wanted to play, because locally there were only about 10 players in Oxford, so we just could only meet up once a week and play against each other each time. I wanted to play against the other players, so I got a list somehow of all the addresses of the various unicycle clubs. There weren't that many, maybe 6 or 7 in England. And I wrote a letter and sent, this is before the internet really, I sent it out by snail mail, postage by the postman, saying, you know, I'm going to organise, how big-headed is that? I'm going to organise a National Unicycle Hockey League, and we're going to meet up regularly and have a tournament, have a tournament, and we'll collect the points. And we'll put the points onto a league table, and then we'll have another tournament, maybe a couple of months later, and all the teams will meet up, and we'll put the points into a league table, and at the end of the year we can see, you know, who's the best team, who's won the league. And I have to, I mean, that is my big, I guess, claim to fame. I was sort of the co-founder of the original British Unicycle Hockey League. I was only really involved for about 6 months, because then I finished university and moved to Singapore, where there was no unicycling at that point whatsoever, and I was well out of it. So I didn't really stick. In my mind, it was a major achievement, but it was just a few months really I was involved in it. But I was the one of the co-founders. It carried on after me. I mean, shout outs to Lee Jellyhead Rickler and the London Loonies. They were really, really into it and very, very important in organising further tournaments, and all the other clubs, the clubs in Bristol, in Cardiff and Leeds, and I left and they carried on. But that's basically my claim to fame. I was the co-founder of the British Unicycle Hockey League. Any stories or tips from those early days of unicycle hockey?
All right, so I mentioned that we had black tyres, and they marked the surface of our first practice area. People have realised this around the world. I think Lars mentions it. If you can get hold of some white tyres, if you're going to be riding on a surface which might get marked. And the big story, I mean, also mentioned it, is when we were at the first British unicycle convention, playing in that first national tournament. Our team was doing pretty well, about to go through to the quarterfinals, I want to say, or the semi-finals, which were being televised. Wow. And we were winning 10-0 against the scratch team, just made up by people who brought a unicycle, wanted to play unicycle hockey, but weren't part of a team. And we were winning 10-0 at half-time. And then at half-time, Yuri Abrahams, from the famous Abrahams unicycle family, turned up and joined the scratch team. And we were like, no, what's going on? And they said, no, he did play in some of their earlier matches. He is part of this scratch team. It's made up of just people who wanted to form their own team at the convention. And with hindsight, 10-0 up with about 15 minutes to play, we really should have made it through to the next stage. But we ended up losing 11-10. Oh, but can you believe it? 11-10. One guy in my team was so gutted. He packed up his unicycle and went straight home, just missed the rest of the convention. And the problem was that Yuri Abrahams was better than us, but he and that intimidated us perhaps. I'd love to do it again and see if we really could have hung on to win. Maybe if we just packed our whole team in front of our goals, we had like 5 players in front of the goal, it would have just slowed them down, and they wouldn't have been able to score enough goals to beat us. They had to score 11 goals in about 15 minutes to beat us, and we had to score 0 goals. Or maybe we could have just kept on knocking the ball into the corner and wedging it and played for time. So that's my sad. It still hurts. It still hurts, because that was it. If we'd got through, we'd have been on TV, and we could have got through maybe to the finals. any other stories from Oxford before we move to Singapore? Well, I've told this story before on the podcast, but I did get arrested for unicycling once because I the cyclists wanted to make central Oxford car free, and as a protest they jammed the road by cycling. Hundreds of cyclists just packed the road and cycled very slowly, perfectly legally, of course. You can have bicycles on the road, but they were cycling really slowly, filling up the road so that cars couldn't get past. That was the protest. And as the captain of the unicycle team, I wanted to be involved, and as a unicycle, it's a hands-free vehicle. The leader of the cycling union was trying to hold a banner, and he was holding the right hand side and trying to ride a bicycle, and he said, well, you've got hands free, could you hold the left hand side of the banner? So I said yes, and of course I got arrested because I was cycling and holding a banner, so my hands went on the handlebars, which is ridiculous because the unicycle doesn't have any handlebars. But luckily, the cycling union organizer was arrested as well. And that's not lucky for him, but luckily for me, he was putting up a massive protest to the police, saying, "No, you can't arrest me!" Rah, rah, rah. And he was making so much noise that the police all turned towards him, and I just legged it. I just ran away. I escaped on my unicycle. I just disappeared into the crowd, so I didn't actually get charged in the end. I escaped. I'm a fugitive. And I did change the regulations in Oxford University Keble College. Under bicycles, it said no cycling in the quadrangle,
And I was caught cycling in the quadrangle, but I was on a unicycle. And I pointed out in the Oxford University rule book that the regulations were under bicycles, and I wasn't riding a bicycle. And nowadays, I changed, the regulations have changed because of me, and it now says cycles. All cycles are banned from being ridden in the quadrangle. So that's my university claim to fame. Made my mark in academia.
All right, thanks Ben. So this is where we met. I say with tongue in cheek. So Singapore. You finish university, you go to Singapore, and there's not really any unicycling. So what happens there?
Yeah, so it was kind of heartbreaking. I end up in a country in 1994 where there's no unicycling. There's no unicyclers. There's only me, as far as I can tell. And it is a very, very small country, Singapore. So you can be fairly certain there weren't a lot of other unicyclists riding around. I would have found them. So I did play a small role in setting up regional unicycle clubs. So first of all, in Singapore, I heard that there was an international school there which had a circus society. So I got in touch with a teacher, and I used to go there every Monday, I think it was, and I taught unicycling. And because the school was quite a rich school, they bought 10 unicycles, and so I taught the kids there how to unicycle. And of the people who learnt to ride, there were two or three who kind of carried on and got into it. Joe Flurry, I would say, and Andrew. There's some videos online on YouTube of me and those guys riding on the streets of Singapore, doing a bit of street uni, early street uni, I guess. And of course, at that point, that's when I started getting shows. Actually, I got my very first, because I am a full-time professional entertainer, and I have been since, well, I've been doing professional shows since about 1995, 96. And what happened was I was riding my unicycle by myself in Singapore, trying to do a little bit of street uni. I didn't know. I was just, it's all coming from me, this. I hadn't really heard of anybody else doing this stuff. I'm just riding around, trying to bunny hop off the curb and whatever, and ride off an edge. Anyway, and I'm riding past a shopping centre, and someone rushes out and says, Can you do the Singapore accent? Okay, getting off the point. So, I'm riding my unicycle. I'm about 22, 23 years old. And someone comes out of a shopping centre and says, Are you a unicyclist? Can you do shows? Can you do a show in my shopping centre? And I went, yeah. And so I got a show in the, that would be next week or a few weeks later. I got a show. I wasn't really ready for the show, but I had masses of enthusiasm and self-confidence, totally unfounded. And I had a cassette player, a stereo cassette player. I played some music. I was unicycling, riding one foot, do a bit of wheel walking, do some juggling on the unicycle. This is only a 20-inch unicycle. That's all I had at that time, which is quite hard to. It's a 20-inch unicycle. It's not the best unicycle for idling and juggling at the same time. Much easier on a giraffe, strangely. Anyway, that was my first show. I got a job teaching English in a language centre, and one of the teachers in Singapore there said, there's an advert in the newspaper, someone's looking for magicians and jugglers to do corporate events. So I joined a company called Foreigners Dance Company, and they went to corporate dinner and dances and did 30-minute shows, and I would go on during the show and do about, I don't know, 5 minutes of juggling and 5 minutes of unicycling dressed as Charlie Chaplin.
and I was getting some work. What was your question, by the way?
Well, basically, I was just talking about what you did in Singapore, unicycle-wise.
All right, so, yeah. So that's where my career began, and basically, I was in the right place at the right time. In the mid-1990s, shopping centres in Singapore wanted to have European performers doing circus shows, and I was the only person in Singapore with a unicycle, and I like quit my day job as an English teacher in a private language centre, and just jumped in, you know, both feet, and decided I'll go full time and be a full time entertainer. And I would do a lot of juggling and unicycling and some magic tricks. No, a lot of juggling, a lot of magic tricks. And at the end, I would do the unicycle. And of course, I'm the only person doing this kind of show in Singapore. So I figured what I needed was to do the classic trick. I bought myself a giraffe unicycle, and I'd finish the show by climbing on the giraffe unicycle with difficulty, using a volunteer, climbing on and juggling fire. Tips here, my own stuff, my own spin, is that I would do it and my trousers would fall off. As I climbed onto the giraffe unicycle, my gimmick was that my trousers fell off. They had special zips, like almost like a stripper would have, a male stripper might have on his trousers. And I could loosen the zips, surreptitiously, put my leg up onto the pedal, climb 6 feet up onto the unicycle. And as I did so, I'd release my trousers, and my trousers would sink down to my ankles, and merriment would ensue as I clambered all over the male volunteer, trying to hold the unicycle upright, rubbing my groin into his face, and making silly jokes about, you know, let me get one thing straight, and adjusting my groin. That's probably a line I ripped off from a performer I probably saw somewhere. I probably added some of my own stuff, though, because I was the only person I knew doing that act in the country.
Is this when you had the experience of pulling the saddle off the unicycle seat and the unicycle almost hitting the birthday girl on the head?
Yeah, that's right. So I started getting birthday party bookings as well as for the shopping centres, which is great because I think shopping centres pretty soon realised, well, after about 10 years, realised that it's just way too noisy to have massive shows all day long in the shopping centre atrium. The shoppers and shop assistants couldn't hear themselves talk. And so that time has passed. There's very few shows in shopping centres at the moment. 2020 now, but birthday parties just goes on forever. So that's another tip. People, maybe some entertainers might look down a bit on a birthday party as a job, birthday party entertainer, but it's fantastic because every year there's a new audience being born. So it's never ending. There's always more people being born to entertain. And that's what I've carried on doing mainly. The core of my business now is birthday parties. What was your question? Just talking about doing unicycling in shows. The saddle coming off. That's a good point, actually. Here's a tip. It's a really obscure tip, which I think is the kind of tip that's good for this podcast because you know, it means that it's not never been mentioned before, which means it might not be useful. But here's my tip. If you're going to take a unicycle to a lot of stage shows, a giraffe unicycle, you know, you want to take a giraffe unicycle because being high up, it's such an impressive way to finish a show. That's why it's a classic. That's why it's become a cliche for street performers. Climb on the big unicycle, juggle fire. Fire's not allowed anymore in most areas, but in the 1990s it was, even inside small buildings. Juggle fire under the smoke alarm, yeah, no worries. I did all that. Although once I did a show, I did the fire juggling, and I used to pass it to, this was right at the start, I used to pass it to the Foreigners Dance Studio
boss man, and he'd carry the fire club, the flaming fire torches, outside. And once his sister did it, and when I finished the show, I went outside through the doors backstage, and there was smoke everywhere because she didn't know how to put out the fire clubs, and she put it in a rag, and the rag had wrapped it in a rag, and the rag had caught fire, and she'd set fire to the floor of Suntec City. So if anybody's listening who works in Suntec City and they are wondering why in about 1995 it was set fire, one corridor was on fire, that was me and the Foreigners Dance Studio Company. So be careful with fire. Sooner or later you will have an accident. Okay, but anyway, yeah, so Giraffe Unicycle, of course you want to take it to the shows. It looks great if the stage is big enough. I wouldn't take it to birthday parties, I'll get to that later. But Giraffe Unicycle, there's a reason why it became a cliche, it's because it's great. And if you're the only person in the country, which I was, there were a few unicyclists eventually in Singapore, because I taught them, and there were some others as well. But I was definitely the only person at that point with a Giraffe Unicycle, so yeah, it's a great way to do the show. Anyway, so, Giraffe Unicycle, take it to the show, but a useful giraffe to have is a 5-foot giraffe. Now, this is probably the smallest giraffe unicycle, but when you get on it, it still looks big and impressive. The difference between a 5-foot and a 6-foot, to someone who has never seen much of giraffe unicycling, it's minimal, the difference. It still looks impressive big on the 5-foot. And what I eventually realized is a 5-foot unicycle will, and I stress that, it will fit inside your average taxi cab. Yeah? Now, at first, when I booked a taxi to go to a show, I was worried that my 5-foot unicycle wouldn't fit in the taxi cab because, yeah, I was just worried it wouldn't. So I used to take off the saddle before I called the taxi. And then when the taxi turned up, the saddle was off and the unicycle was only about, I don't know, 4.5 feet or whatever. It was under 5 foot, and you could lay it down flat in the... Well, this is pretty hard to describe without pictures. I'll put a picture on the website. But if you're sitting in the back seat of a taxi, you can lay a 5 foot... You can lay the unicycle widthways in front of you on the floor. Yeah? So the wheel is by the right-hand door, and the stem goes up to the left-hand door. And I did that for quite a few years, taking the saddle off, getting in a taxi, putting the saddle on when I get to the show, finish the show, take the saddle off, put the unicycle in the taxi, get to the next show, put the saddle back on, do the show, and eventually, of course, I almost hit the girl on the head with my unicycle. And then I don't know how it took me so long, maybe because I'm stupid, but one day I just thought, you know what? I think a 5-foot unicycle with the saddle on will fit in a taxi cab. And it will! It will! You have to put it slightly diagonally. Diagonally. It's hard to describe. I'll put some photos on the website. TheBigBenShow.com/podcasts. But if you put the wheel on the floor on the right hand side of the back of the taxi, and then the saddle is high and it goes on the left hand side, resting probably on the windowsill of the taxi door, and it's fine. Yeah, it doesn't quite fit in horizontally, but if you put it diagonally, a 5-foot giraffe unicycle can fit in a taxi, and that is my tip for performers. Okay. Is there any other tips for using a unicycle at a show? Yeah, there's and nowadays, as I mentioned, I do a lot of birthday parties, and I would recommend taking a 12-inch unicycle. That's a 12-inch wheel, obviously with quite a long seat post, because most 12-inches unicycles will come with tiny seat posts, so you've got to put a long seat post in so that an adult, me, can ride it. And that's what I would take to a birthday party, because in a birthday party, you're going to have a very, often you're going to be in a very small area, maybe in someone's living room.
riding a 5-foot giraffe unicycle, you can do it, and I did again. I did it for quite a few years, taking my 5-foot giraffe to people's living rooms and doing birthday party shows. But it's a bit too big. What can happen is when you dismount, the wheel of the unicycle might hit something behind you, which is bad, you know, also, and then the rest of the unicycle will just topple forward like a tumbling tree. And you could end up in the audience, which did happen just once. Luckily, no one was hurt. But I would say, take the tiniest unicycle you can if you're doing birthday parties, because it's still unicycling, it's still juggling, it still looks good, and it will fit into anybody's living room, no matter how small.
And extra, also, rocking, idling on a 20-inch unicycle and juggling feels very different to idling and rocking on a giraffe unicycle and juggling. Whereas a 12-inch unicycle, for some reason, maybe it's the proportions of wheel to length of stem, it feels very similar to riding on a giraffe. In fact, it feels very easy. So that's another reason I'd recommend using a 12-inch unicycle at a birthday party for your final trick, juggling on the unicycle.
And by the way, shout out to Andy Comic, Mr. Andy Selinger. I met him in Hong Kong, and that's what he did. He had a 12-inch unicycle. In fact, his 12-inch unicycle was so cool, it had just quick-release bolts, so he could just unclip everything really quickly, and he could fit the 12-inch unicycle into a box that went on the back of a motor scooter, and he actually could get to shows on a motor scooter, which is a tip for people out there. Getting to shows and transport is perhaps one of the most stressful things for me anyway. I'm always worried, am I going to get a taxi in time? Is it going to be raining and then there's no empty taxis for me to get to? So this guy, Andy Selinger, Andy Comic, he managed to fit his entire show into a big box on the back of his moped. And that's why a 12-inch unicycle is useful, I guess. It's extra small. And he could then just drive his moped to whatever show he was going to. He never had to worry about whether a taxi would be there or not. There you go. Nice tip from Andy. Now, you're in Singapore, and there is a Singapore unicycle club now, Singapore unicyclists. So how did that happen? Were you part of that? Yeah. Again, I'm not too sure of the dates, but around about the year 2000, I eventually met a few other unicyclists. A key figure is my main man, Jolyon Kaplan, who was a lecturer at the Singapore Polytechnic, I want to say. And he had his own giraffe. His big thing was he would play the saxophone whilst riding his giraffe unicycle, or riding a 20-inch unicycle. He went on to do a lot of busking and off-stage performances doing that. I met him. About the same time, I met a New Zealander who'd been living in Hong Kong, where they play unicycle hockey. And his name was Simon Perrier, and he was in Singapore. Also came to the Singapore Juggling Club, which I was one of the founders of. And then there was a Singaporean guy called Kai Lun, I want to say, and he was the first guy who told me about Muni, mountain unicycling. And this is all happening about 2000 at the Singapore Juggling Club. So we thought, okay, let's start teaching unicycling and set up a unicycle team. And I wanted to play unicycle hockey because I played that about, 7 years ago, and I really wanted to play it again. Before we get into unicycle hockey, how about the Muni you mentioned? Oh yeah, it was about that time. Again, I'm not 100% sure of the exact date, but Kai Lun from Singapore has somehow by himself discovered mountain unicycling. I'm not sure whether it was him or Jolyon had a VCD of Chris Holm, unicycle legend,
doing some extreme unicycling, you know, jumping across cliffs on his unicycle, off-road tracks. And so we saw the video, we were like, wow, this is amazing. We didn't know this existed, we didn't know this was possible. Kailun said, hey, there's a mountain bike trail at the Bukit Timah Nature Reserve in Singapore. Let's do that. I've done it before, so I, that's what he said. I hadn't done it before. So we went along. It was exhausting. Singapore is on the equator. It's boiling hot. And once you're on this trail, there's no way out, really, until you finish it about 2 hours later. But it was brilliant fun riding our unicycles up and down mountain bike footpaths, basically. Brilliant. Mountain unicycling. Really love it. I'm in Hong Kong now. I should do... There are some trails here. I should do it some more. Alrighty, so how about the Singapore unicycle hockey? Okay, yeah, so... So we've got a as an offshoot of the Singapore Juggling Club, we now have Singapore unicyclists. We've got our own t-shirts. Yay! We're trying to play unicycle hockey. We had a blog for a while, recording our commentaries on all our games. And then in 2004, there was a Unicon World Unicycle Championships in Japan, which is, you know, same sort of area of the world as Singapore. It's in the east. And so in 1996 I went to a Unicon from Singapore, and Jack Halpern was very excited. I was the first person from Singapore to go to a Unicon, and so he announced it in Mandarin, because Jack Halpern can speak pretty much every known language. He announced, you know, there's a guy from Singapore. He announced this in Chinese. And of course, I didn't speak any Chinese, because actually I'm from England. But I was the first person from Singapore to go to a Unicon. That was in 1996 in England. I traveled from Singapore to England. And then in 2004, the Unicon was in Japan. And then the first real Singaporean, Julian, came with me. Julian was one of the Singaporean unicyclists. He came with me, and we went to the Unicon in Japan in 2004. And there, of course, I joined the unicycle hockey tournament, and I joined it as part of a Singapore-Hong Kong unicycle hockey team, because that's where I met Martin Turner. And Roz Best, and I want to say, the names will come back to me. So there were some unicyclists. You check out the Steve Dressler podcast. It might have been the one before this one, because he was the guy who helped. He was one of the guys who helped get Hong Kong unicycling going. And so at the Unicon, I meet some Hong Kong unicyclists in 2004. We're in Japan. And we form a team. We didn't do very well, but at least we played. It was brilliant fun. We played unicycle hockey. We went on the... Everywhere you go to Unicon, it's fantastic. We went on all the mountain rides. We played unicycle hockey. We had to go unicycle basketball for the first time ever. I was no good, because no way I can pick up the ball off the floor when I'm on a unicycle. Anyway, so we played unicycle hockey. Didn't do very well. But get in touch with Martin Turner and the Hong Kong unicyclists. And when the Unicon's over, we say, hey, come on, let's meet up. And so I take the Singapore unicycle hockey team to Hong Kong. And, you know, I think first, which way round was it? And I can't remember. Yeah, I think if I'm not wrong. So 2004 in the summer, the Unicon in Japan. And then I guess in the autumn of 2004, I took a Singapore unicycle hockey team to Hong Kong, and we had a unicycle hockey match, I think. And then the following year, Hong Kong brought a team to Singapore, and we had a unicycle hockey match, Singapore versus Hong Kong in Singapore. Oh, at that point, Yo-Yo Muhlmeier turned up. The famous German unicycle hockey pioneer. So he got us following the rules much more professionally. That was a good point. And then strangely, Yo-Yo moved to Hong Kong, and then strangely, a few years later, I moved to Hong Kong, and we've just carried on. We play unicycle hockey every Friday at the King's Park Centenary Centre in Jordan in Hong Kong, except for this year, because there's so much coronavirus, we hardly ever it's hardly ever open. But that's what we do, year in, year out. Oh, and people like Rob Rogers and Martin Turner have been quite influential in organising and setting up. Yeah, so the Singapore versus Hong Kong international match evolved into the APUC, the Asia Pacific Unicycle Championships, where they have the unicycle hockey tournament and they invite the unicycle teams from the region. So you've got Australia, you've got Korea, maybe the Philippines, maybe Japan, definitely Hong Kong and Singapore, and meeting up every couple of years to have a small international unicycle convention. All right, oh, thanks, Ben. Does that bring us up to date then?
Yeah, pretty much. Are you still unicycling regularly?
Yeah, I play, like I say, when coronavirus allows, I play unicycle hockey once a week. I generally go on a unicycle sort of long distance ride for about an hour once a week. Hong Kong's a strange place, although it's full of tower blocks and massive tall buildings. Because it's built on a very steep island, you've only got to go uphill for about 20 minutes and you're amongst the trees. So where I go, I can go up Old Peak Road onto the peak, and there's some lovely just paths through the trees that I can unicycle around once a week. Good for the soul. And of course, as a full-time entertainer, I do a unicycle trick in pretty much every show I do, week in, week out. If it's a big stage show, I take a giraffe, a five-footer, because it will fit in a taxi. If it's a birthday party, I take a 12-inch unicycle, because it's so small and so convenient, even for tiny venues.
All right, thanks, Ben. Thanks very much. Ben, any other tips? Final tips?
All right, there's a couple of tips. If you've got a giraffe unicycle and you're doing stage shows, I would recommend learning what I call a vertical giraffe dismount, because for many people on a giraffe, you take your feet off the pedals and you drop straight down, and the wheel of the giraffe will either go shooting out in front of you or shooting out behind you. But if you're on a stage, be careful, because the stage might not be big enough. As happened to me once very early in my career, the wheel shot out behind me, hit the wall, and I toppled forward into the crowd. So I would recommend, as a tip for a performer, if you're using a giraffe, learn to be able to dismount the giraffe vertically. What I mean is you take your foot off and you descend straight down, holding onto the giraffe unicycle saddle and seat post, so the giraffe unicycle also remains vertical and doesn't go flying out in front or behind. That's one of my tips.
Yeah, good one. Anything else? Yeah, we're on a roll.
Another tip I would say is, if the ceiling's a bit low and you've taken your giraffe, consider juggling balls instead of juggling clubs on the giraffe, if that's your trick. Because juggling clubs under a low ceiling, the clubs are going to hit the ceiling if you're on a giraffe. But juggling ball, if you have a set of balls, juggling balls, you can juggle the balls instead, and balls, because they're not as big and as bulky as clubs, won't hit the ceiling as easily. Oh, and the final tip is, I kind of mentioned it a bit in passing, is get a hold of white or some kind of non-marking tyre, because sooner or later you'll roll up to a venue to do a show, and the floor will be some sort of shiny wood or shiny linoleum plasticky stuff, and your unicycle tires will leave horrible, horrible black marks on the floor. But if you get a white or non-marking tire, There's not really any marks left, so I would recommend performers to get white tyres for their unicycles.
Right, Ben, this is Clive Oliver. Thanks very much, and talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much. Take care. Goodbye.
And remember, if you want to find out more about all the names mentioned in this podcast, then go to thebigbenshow.com/podcasts, and there you will find detailed show notes, videos and photos, and footnotes to accompany this episode. Should learn to speak better, shouldn't I?
Yeah, literally, the whole corridor was on fire because you couldn't put the fire clubs out. And that's why fire juggling is no longer allowed in Singapore.